Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 390 to close at 16,492. S&P 500 Index up 48 at 1,969. NASDAQ Composite up 128 at 4,811. Yield on the 10-year Treasury up 6 basis points at 2.19%. Oil down 11 cents at $45.94 per barrel. Gold down $1.40 at $1,122.40 an ounce. Silver up 22 cents at $14.90. There's no particular rhyme nor reason to explain today's rally on Wall Street, or, for that matter, last week's declines. Last Friday's jobs report did little to provide clarity about whether the Fed would raise rates at next week's FOMC meeting. The economy added 173,000 jobs in August, which was below expectations, and the unemployment rate dropped to 5.1%. Now, following Friday's employment data, futures market traders predicted about a 20% chance a rate hike will come this month. That's down from about 30% before the jobs report. I think the Fed might act next week, just to clear the air. If you remember back to the taper tantrum of 2013 when the markets became jittery about the prospect of the end of quantitative easing, the anticipation was worse than the actual event. So the easiest thing might just be to do it and be done. Of course, it is easy to argue against a rate hike. The U6 unemployment rate is still around 10.3%. Some people consider this the real unemployment rate because it includes part-time workers seeking full-time jobs and marginally employed workers. The Fed has a dual mandate to promote full employment and price stability. Prices have been stable for the most part. Inflation is not a problem. The usual argument for raising interest rates is to dampen an overheating economy in which inflationary pressures have become too high. As for full employment, the Fed has said that 5.2% is full employment. But wages have been stagnant, and there is still plenty of slack in the labor market. For many, many people, there has been no recovery. The argument for raising rates really does nothing to help Main Street, but it might help the bankers on Wall Street. And faced with that option, the Fed has always erred on the side of Wall Street. China's imports shrank far more than expected in August, falling for the 10th straight month. Imports fell 13.8% from a year earlier. That follows a drop of 8.1% in July. Exports were down 5.5%. The trade is calculated in U.S. dollars, and research firm Capital Economics reckons that trade has actually been quite healthy recently in volume terms. China's government has spent $236 billion or so trying to shore up its stock market since a rout began about 3 months ago. According to Goldman Sachs at the G20 meeting over the weekend, China was all about talking stability. A governor of the People's Bank of China said the rout in the stock market was near its end, noting that leverage had declined and that the real economy went relatively unscathed. Despite the Chinese economy's visible slowdown and dramatic action over the past month, officials maintained that the economy would continue to grow at 7% annually. Yes, the country's economy will close this year the same way it did last year. 7% growth. Despite all the market turmoil and the yuan devaluation and industrial slowdown, 7% growth. China's major stock indexes moved higher. The Shanghai was up 2.9%. The Shenzhen advanced 3.8%. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has won a second three-year term as the president of his Liberal Democratic Party. Japan's economy contracted at an annualized 1.2% rate in the second quarter, which was a little better than estimates. However, capital expenditures fell 0.9%, more than the original estimate of 0.1%, and that clouds growth prospects. German exports recovered to climb 2.4% in July after dropping 1.1% in June. Eurozone second quarter GDP growth has been revised up to 0.4% on quarter from an initial estimate of 0.3%. The Stoxx Europe 600 index had its best gains in more than a month. U.S. small business confidence rose modestly in August, suggesting the economy continued to grow at a steady clip halfway through the third quarter. The NFIB Optimism Index improved from 95.4 to 95.9, still not above the 42-year average of 98. Small business owners did not seem to be very concerned about the antics of the stock market or China's currency devaluation. Maybe it was too late in the month to be fully captured by the survey, so more might be revealed in September. But most business owners have their capital primarily invested in their own firm, not other people's firms. And a side note, 33% of small business owners reported all credit needs met. 49% explicitly said they did not want a loan. For most of the recovery, record numbers of firms have been on the credit sidelines, seeing no particular good reason to borrow. The American Medical Association says two proposed mergers of U.S. health insurers worth tens of billions of dollars would hurt competition in commercial health plans in as many as 17 states. Aetna announced plans to buy smaller rival Humana in early July, and Anthem agreed to buy Cigna later that month. Both mergers are being reviewed by federal antitrust regulators as well as state insurance officials. The American Hospital Association also recently made public its analysis of the two deals, also saying they would hurt competition. European Union antitrust regulators have approved GE's $13.9 billion acquisition of the power business of French peer Alstom. GE will have to sell some of Alstom's assets. A federal appeals court is set to decide whether judges can tear up corporate prosecution agreements they deem too lenient. In February, a federal district judge in Washington, D.C. rejected a deferred prosecution agreement, or DPA, he considered weak in a case involving Fokker Services B.V., a Dutch aerospace firm, accused of making more than 1,000 illegal shipments of parts and components to Iran and other sanctioned countries from 2005 to 2010. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit is now reviewing the judge's decision, with arguments scheduled for this week and a ruling expected in coming months. DPAs have been the favored tool of the Department of Justice in dealing with banksters. The DOJ sets up a deal to allow banksters or other corporate criminals to promise not to break the law in the future in exchange for a fine, in essence, cash for leniency. In the case of Fokker, the DOJ made a big splash about a $10.5 million fine for selling aircraft parts and services to customers in Iran, Burma, and Sudan. There was a parallel civil settlement with the Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control to pay an additional $10.5 million. And if you go down the press release, you'll find that Fokker received about $21 million in gross revenue for those 1,153 illegal transactions, so the penalty was simply to give back what they received. It is supposed to be a probationary period for the offenders. If they can stay out of trouble, they can stay out of legal trouble. The problem is that many corporations, especially the bankers, are repeat offenders, serial offenders. In the case of Fokker, the probationary period was only 18 months, and a judge considered that overly lenient. It really doesn't matter because the DOJ never goes back on repeat offenders. The major banks, J.P. Morgan, B of A, Citi, Goldman Sachs, along with their international cohorts, UBS, RBS, HSBC, Barclays, and Deutsche Bank, have all been repeat offenders. Everything from rigging LIBOR to Forex to muni bond markets to money laundering to bribery to sanctions violations to forgery, well, the list goes on and on. The result is that even after a long history of offenses, J.P. Morgan, for example, can pay a $550 million fine for rigging the foreign exchange market, sign a DPA, and Jamie Dimon gets a $20 million pay package. Media General said it would buy media company Meredith Corp. for about $2.3 billion to create the third-largest local TV station owner in the United States. The combined company, to be named Meredith Media General, will initially have 88 TV stations that reach 30% of TV households. Blackstone Group's real estate fund will buy U.S. luxury hotel owner Strategic Hotels and Resorts and a unit of Strategic Hotels Funding LLC in a deal valued at $6 billion, including debt. Strategic Hotels and Resorts is a real estate investment trust that owns hotels operated by some of the top hospitality chains, such as Hyatt Hotels, Intercontinental Hotels Group, and Marriott International. United Continental has fired CEO Jeff Smyzik because of a probe into improprieties at Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Smyzik, who served as chairman, president, and CEO, will receive about $4.9 million as a separation payment. Amazon plans to release a $50 tablet in time for the holiday season with a 6-inch screen tablet, a mono speaker priced at half the cost of its cheapest Fire device. MasterCard starts testing a program today to allow cardholders to verify their online purchases with a selfie. The credit card company also testing fingerprint and voice recognition for verification. And tomorrow, Apple has a big event planned in San Francisco where they're expected to announce a new iPhone because that new phone you just bought is already obsolete. They'll almost certainly introduce a faster, slimmer phone because, well, because Apple is a phone company. They are also expected to introduce a redesigned Apple TV set-top box with new capabilities for apps and games, plus recognition of Siri voice commands to search for shows, so you can now ask your TV where you left the remote control. And they're also expected to announce a new, smarter version of Siri, so you could tell Siri to set the alarm for 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. It could wake you up, also turn on the lights, open the curtain, and start the coffee machine, if you were really a geek about it. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. You'll find text, audio, interviews, and a free podcast just by going to eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com.